Hi everyone, before we go into the podcast, I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I'm super grateful for your continued loyalty and support. If you could do me a quick favour, if you could give me a review on Apple Podcasts, it really helps the algorithm and it will help this podcast go up the lists. If there are any subjects or topics that you want me to cover, then please do reach out to me on DM on LinkedIn and I will do my best to find the best guest for that subject or topic. This is the Absolute Business Mindset Podcast, created and hosted by Mark Haywood. This podcast will interview entrepreneurs, business owners, and people in their careers. We will delve into their journey to success, key life milestones, and go deep into their area of expertise. Get ready to learn from other successes and failures. Today, we have Stevie Dawn Carter, who is a professional speaker, a coach, and a shark lover. Hello, Stevie. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Mark. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So hopefully we'll have a lot of fun here. So first thing we talk about is your education. And when I was doing my research on you, you are very educated. This is probably the one of few people that actually have PhDs. I don't have a lot of PhDs on my podcast, but there have been a few. So first of all, you did a degree in law and a degree in business. Mm-hmm. So just package that together. Why did you choose law? And did you fall out of love with it to go into business? Why those two subjects?
Yeah, absolutely. So my educational journey was definitely unique in that every single degree I got in something new, which I think kind of goes to my life journey of just not knowing what I wanted to do with my life, right? So my first degree was a paralegal degree. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I went that direction, and it was through an internship during that degree that I went, oh my gosh, I do not want to be a lawyer. I do not want to go to law school. This is not for me, right? So, but I got the degree. Yeah, and then I was like, okay. So I went in and got my bachelor's degree in business because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I had actually at the age of 17 owned and operated a dance studio in Australia for a year. Right. And it was a complete and utter failure. However, I learned that, hey, maybe if I learned more about business, I would do better in this entrepreneurship world. So then I got my bachelor's degree in business. And of course, I wanted to own and operate dance studios because that's what I had done for 20 years as I was a dancer. Okay. So then I suffered a career-ending injury. Okay. Couldn't dance anymore. Right. So now I have a business degree, but no clue what I want to do with my life because I had always had one path, one vision. And so I thought, well, how do I take those skill sets as a dance teacher and move them into something that didn't involve dance? And what came up was, okay, teaching. I like to be a teacher. Right. So I knew I needed to get a master's degree to do more teaching. And a friend of mine said, well, what are you going to get it in? And I said, well, I guess I'll get it in my favorite subject in college, which was sociology.
Right.
So I went back, got a master's degree in sociology and said, this is what I'm going to do. And I went into the college classroom, taught for a while, thought really that academic was my world. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the study. I enjoyed the rigor. So I went ahead and got my PhD, but I didn't want to do a PhD in sociology because I wanted to keep my options open. So I got a PhD in leadership. So four different degrees, all different topics, and all because it just, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I just kept changing. Yeah. And now I think I've kind of found the perfect way to use all of it. Right. But still, it was a long journey for sure. Okay.
Let's unpack this a little bit. So my first question is, so you were actually a dancer. So were you training to be a professional dancer?
Yeah. So I started dance when I was 18 months old. Right. And I continued to dance professionally until I was 26. So I thought that dance was going to be my world. I wasn't.
What type of dance was it?
Yeah, great question. I started in ballet, tap, jazz, more the traditional young girl dreams. Yeah. But I didn't have the talent really to make a professional career out of that. But I was a gifted teacher. So I did a lot of teaching, a lot of choreography, stuff like that. And then once I got injured, I could not do those kinds of dance anymore. But I knew that dance was still important in my life. So then I actually went into ballroom, Latin, country, swing, all the partner dances, because those are easier on my body than the traditional dance was. And so I still dance to this day. I still compete nationally and judge. I just do it in a very different way than I did when I was 18 and 19 years old.
Wonderful. Oh, I'm glad you are still dancing. What do you think you learned from the experience of actually being injured and having to give up on it, your dream that you'd always thought that was going to be your dream?
I think the biggest thing probably that I learned from that experience was just that it's okay to change your mind.
Okay.
That it's okay to want something at 18 and then at 28 to want something else. Mm. And people ask me all the time, do you think if you hadn't gotten injured, would you still have changed over time? And my answer to that is yes. Actually, I think I would have. I think that around the same time that I got injured, dance was losing some of its power in my life. And I was starting to feel pulled to do some other things. Mm. So I feel like the injury was like the sign from the universe that, hey, it's time to do that. But I think what it really proved to me is you have to be okay changing your mind. Don't be so stuck on one goal that when it gets taken away, or even if you achieve that goal, that then you go, well, I've got nothing else. I don't know what else to do. Like, keep dreaming, keep exploring other things. Yeah. Because I really spent a good 6 months or a year, probably just in a kind of a dark pit of despair after the injury, because I had no clue what to do with myself.
Yeah.
And in finding that new dream and finding that new path, I also gave myself permission that I could continue to do that throughout my life. Whatever I choose now doesn't have to be the thing forever. Yeah. And that was really freeing. And that's something that I still look at to this day.
Absolutely. I think I genuinely believe the hardest times in our lives give us often the most meaning, because they're tough and you have to get through them. So
they're
really, really important. So let's just pick some of let's talk about your master's and your PhD. So master's, you decided sociology was your favorite subject. So you went all in on that. Mm-hmm. Why then did you not do a PhD in sociology? Why did you change philosophy?
Great question. So I was teaching sociology. I was enjoying sociology. I had enjoyed the study of it, but it got to be a place where I felt very pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. It is a very specific discipline. And so I was always talking about certain topics. I was only getting hired as a teacher to teach certain classes. And I was just getting bored with it, if I'm honest. I wanted something new. I wanted to do something new. And all of the research getting funded at that time was very much around culture and race and diversity, which are all very important topics, but was not my topic of interest.
Right.
And so I was having trouble getting grant funding for some of my research. And it just kind of was a sign of maybe this isn't the right thing. And so while I was working at the college, a friend of mine said, well, have you ever thought about getting a more generic PhD that would allow you to teach across disciplines in different ways? And I was like, no, I haven't thought about that. Tell me more. And she goes, well, if you get a degree in something like, and she was like business or this or that. And then she said leadership. She goes, I think that then you could use a lot of your sociological knowledge, but you would also be able to teach across disciplines in different areas. I think you would find it more energizing and just more freeing. And that leadership word just stuck with me. I had always been a consumer of like self-help, be your own leader kind of books. Yeah. And so when she said it, I was like, you know, what about leadership? Maybe I should look at that. And so 3 months later, I had applied to a doctoral program and I was going. So it really was just sociology wasn't it anymore, right? Coming to that, just that feeling of this isn't the right place for me anymore. It has been, but it's not going forward. So I need a new place, a new path. And I think that's why I made that choice.
Okay. We'll get into the leadership. We'll go deep into the area of leadership. I'm just interested. So your degree in business, and then you then went into academia, which is in my mind, almost the antithesis of business, because
in a lot of ways
you get grants, you get to spend your money in academia, in business you need to generate money. So how does that marry up, the academia with your business thoughts and ideas?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing that I noticed in the change was really where the focus is, right? When you're in academics, the focus is always on others. So it's, you know, teaching the students, if you're in a student-facing thing, or doing the research, it's always outside yourself. Mm-hmm. Business is really about you doing the work, right? I've got to bring in the dollars. I've got to bring in the sales. I've got to find the clients. So it was interesting studying something that was so personal, mm-hmm. and then switching to something more outside, right? And having to change the way I spoke to people, having to change the way I talked about my own projects than what I wanted to do, because it was just a different feeling. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I think having both has really allowed me to be able to work in different industries, because I've been able to go back and work in educational environments and I understand their concepts and I understand their language. But I also have that business training, which helped me really get my business off the ground when I started it.
Okay, fantastic. So you were a lecturer in sociology, then you moved to Butler Community College, where you did sociology and psychology. Uh-huh. And then there was a shift in 2010 where you appear to move away from traditional subjects and more into leadership and how to be a good leader. Mm-hmm. We've sort of touched on it, but what was that shift away from traditional into sort of business leadership?
Yeah, again, just feeling that need to have a different path, to be more open to things. And I just happened to at that time be looking to move locations. I had been at the place I was at for a while. I was going through some personal things and wanted to move. So when I put in for jobs, I put in for jobs in both disciplines. So I put in for jobs in sociology and psychology and more the traditional teaching path. And then I also put in for jobs that were more just on administrative and student development programming. And I said to myself, hey, the universe will tell me which one I'm supposed to take, right? It'll be whatever comes up in a location that I like. I love Texas. I have lived in Texas before. So when Texas came calling, I was like, that sounds perfect. And they gave me the opportunity to really get into administrative student development work and to run their leadership program, which was the exact moment I was starting my PhD. So it all kind of came together in this perfect moment. And that made it the right choice.
And so then you then became a founder of Orange Compass, which has moved into Stevie Dawn Inspires. And that covers leadership, management, comms, emotional intelligence. I just want to touch on emotional intelligence, because I think it's the core skill in business, which is often underlooked, being able to look at yourself from an emotional intelligence and equally being able to see other people in emotional intelligence. What for you is the most important aspect of emotional intelligence for business owners?
Yeah, I think it's understanding that your emotions influence your decision making. And as a business owner, we make a lot of decisions. Not that other people don't as well, but as business owners, I think we make decisions that affect us and our lives and our families at a deeper level sometimes, because we're choosing which clients to take, which clients not to take. And so as a business owner, if you don't have an awareness of your emotions and an awareness of how they impact your decision making, you can easily choose the wrong things and then suffer for that over time. Whereas if you had the awareness, could identify those emotions, identify they were impacting your decision making, maybe you would make a shift. And when I was doing my dissertation, I studied emotional intelligence development of leaders. And what I noticed were, as you just said, the most effective leaders, the most effective business owners had a high skill level in emotional intelligence. And I think a large part of that was because of the ability it gives them to make decisions and also the ability it gives them to communicate with others.
Do you think a rational leader is always a good leader? Someone who bases themselves on rationality and logical decision making versus someone that is perhaps more emotionally charged or emotionally driven.
We'll be back after a quick break. If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
I think somebody who can weigh both is the perfect answer, right? I want somebody who's passionate about their people, who's passionate about their product or their service. I want somebody who has emotions up and down the range. But at the same time, I want somebody who understands that anger is not a good emotion to use when making a decision. Desperation is not a good emotion to use when making a decision. I want somebody who has the ability to be emotional, but also the rationale to say, maybe today is not that moment to let that emotion drive me one way or the other. I think that's really when we get to the key of being an effective leader and an effective business owner.
Is it more about controlling your emotions?
Yeah, I think it's about understand. I don't always like the word control because emotions are hormonal and most of us can't control that. It's a biological function. There isn't much we can do. But I do think it's about understanding our emotions and understanding when maybe it is a time to not let them out, right? There's an element of maybe now is not the time to give this feedback because I'm in a place of anger. And the feedback's going to come out wrong. Maybe now is not the time to choose to work with this client or not, because I just lost a client yesterday and I'm still feeling the pain of that. And I'm going to say yes to this client and regret it a week from now. Mm-hmm. I want somebody who understands those emotions so they can weigh them appropriately and know when to let them out and let them guide them and know when not to. Yeah. So I don't always know that control is the right word, but it's about understanding and managing. I would say manage is the word, managing emotions effectively.
Yeah, that's probably a better way of describing it. So tell me about Stevie Dawn Inspires. It's been going for 6 years. Tell me a little bit about your business.
Yeah. So when I was working in the college, I had been in colleges for over 12 years and it got kind of tired and I wanted to step away from academics and back into the entrepreneurial world. That was always on my brain since I was 17. I knew I wanted to do something. And so just kind of a perfect moment happened and we were like, okay, let's do it. So my husband and I started with Stevie Dawn Inspires. And the thought was for it to be an umbrella company. We had a lot of different things we wanted to do and we wanted to try out. But my students had always told me I was an inspiring person. And so I actually let them create the name and the logo for my company before I left, which was a really cool class project. And they still comment on it, which is neat. And then I started the first company we started under that umbrella was Orange Compass, which was a corporate training company. And it was basically taking all the leadership training, all the sociological knowledge I had and bringing it to a corporate environment. Because as you said, emotional intelligence is a very important skill that most people don't look at. So my goal was, where can I bring that to the corporate environment? I'm teaching it at the college level. That's awesome. But what about the people who are already out of college working? How do I help them with emotional intelligence? How do I help them with leadership? So that was our first company that we started under that umbrella. And we did a lot of different things over the time. We've had a lot of different businesses kind of come and go under that. And today it looks very different than it did back then. But 6 years ago, that's when that all started. And it was a pretty crazy time.
How do you manage corporate people differently to inspiring younger children in the college?
Yeah, I think you have to understand that when you're working with employees at a company, the culture of that company will dictate whether they're actually going to take your advice or not. Right. So what I would find is I would go into these companies and I would tell them, here's how you use emotional intelligence. Here's how you become better leaders. And even if the person sitting in the session was like, yes, that makes sense. I get it. Cool. I'll do that. If their boss didn't support it, or their boss's boss didn't support it, or just the culture didn't support it, I could come in 6 months later and say, hey, how's it going? And they'd be like, it didn't work. It didn't go anywhere. I found teaching it at the college level, there were some of the students who didn't have that experience yet. They weren't so ingrained in a specific culture and a specific corporate environment. So everything I said, they could take in and say, these are strategies. I'm going to use them, right? I'm going to take all my notes. I feel like in the corporate environment, I found I had to change my strategies and alter them to fit within the culture that they were in. So it was a little less like black and white, and it was a little more gray. I found that to be very interesting because it challenged me to go deeper into my own knowledge and expertise and really craft things that were useful. But it's also one of the reasons that, you know, I didn't want corporate training to end up being everything we did. And I started doing coaching because I needed something slightly different from that corporate environment. So it was good. And it was also something that showed me I needed something else as well.
While I was doing the research, you said somewhere that you use humor. So how do you use humor in your training and education?
Yeah, I think humor is, it's a disarming mechanism, right? So when somebody makes us laugh, it promotes us to want to listen to them, because somebody who makes you laugh is somebody you can trust. Inevitably in your brain, that's the way it adds up. So if I can make somebody laugh, what that does is that lowers that barrier they have to the learning that I need them to do. And so what I found, and this is true, whether you're working with high school students or corporate leaders, doesn't really matter. If you can make them laugh in the first 10 to 15 minutes, they're going to be much more likely to listen to you for the next 30. And so I really tried to make sure that every presentation I went into, I had some sort of humorous comment, some sort of humorous story. And I still do it every presentation, because I think that it just allows people to then connect with you and really listen to the other things that you're wanting them to get out of the session.
So that's an interesting idea, because as you say, if you make someone laugh, there's immediately the barriers go down of resistance. So psychologically, let's break that down a little bit deeper. So what does it do to the brain that means that you're disarmed? Is it because to make someone laugh, there's a connection, because you're making someone else laugh and they feel a connection with you? Is it trust? Is it connection? Is it a bond?
It's trust. It's connection. It's what we call scaffolding. So if you think of our brains as little connected neurons, right? And we have these neural pathways between two ideas. And so if I tell you sky and blue, there's a neural connection between most of our brains that say the sky is blue. There's a connection there, a neural pathway. We know it makes sense. So what happens when you make somebody laugh, typically what it means is you shared something that they connected to something they already knew. So for example, if I tell, I have a story that I tell about my husband, and I tell lots of stories on my husband. He's a wonderful man. And sometimes my stories don't make him out to be, but he is a wonderful man. But if I tell the story of my husband and I say, you know, there was this day we're sitting on the couch and I said to him, trash day tomorrow. And he said, yep, I meant, please go take out the trash for tomorrow. Yeah. He thought I said, I knew it was trash day. And he was just applauding me for the fact that I knew that. He was impressed because I've never taken the trash out before.
Right?
In that moment, most people, and even you did it, you smiled. Why? Because there was something in your brain that goes, I know where she's going with this. I'm making a connection, right? So what I'm doing is I'm scaffolding. I'm building a connection between that which went in your brain to what I've already said. And now there's more trust and more connection. Mm-hmm. Now, when I teach you that the reason that story occurs in most people's lives at some point is because we're not fully communicating our expectations. We're making assumptions. Now I can teach you something on top of that scaffolding. Mm. So you've made a connection because of the humor and the story. Now I'm able to put learning on top of that connection and it deepens that connection. You're more likely to remember that a week from now than if I just told you, hey, people struggle with communication because they make assumptions. Mm. Like, it helps to have the humor, to have the story to connect. And so that's why that works so well. It's a brain science called scaffolding that we use to help people learn.
So I interviewed a guy called Massio Jordan, and he talked a lot on the podcast about the importance of stories and telling stories, and sometimes fabricating stories, sometimes making them humorous, as you just did with your husband. And I'm sure every man around the world has something similar with the trash day, with the rubbish day. But it's interesting that the whole concept of stories, I thought after talking to Massio, was that, again, that makes a connection with people because you're giving a little bit of yourself in a story, or a little bit of something about yourself or your family or your friends or your colleagues or whatever. And that is actually really powerful because, again, it makes the same sort of connection of scaffolding with the humor. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. That's entirely true. Stories are the most powerful way for us to get people to learn. Stories of ourselves to build connection and trust. And then what I call universal stories, stories that everybody can see themselves in, because that allows you to make those connections for learning. So absolutely, stories are the golden nugget gem of any person's communication.
Absolutely. Do you find leaders in corporate are not so good at telling stories?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. What I find is that they're really good at giving examples, but only examples from their personal experience. Mm. And as we just said, there's a difference between a story to make a connection on a personal level and a story that people can see themselves in and make a connection to. What I find is in most leaders I work with, they have no problem giving stories and examples from their point of view and from their life, because they've got all kinds of them. But when I ask them to share a story anybody could understand, they get a little tripped up, right? Because they're so focused that they forget to think big picture, right? They forget to think about kind of the universal kind of setting that people are in. And it's one of the most powerful tools you can have in your leadership toolkit, is you can have stories and your ability to tell stories. But I do find that a lot of the corporate leaders I work with, they have examples, they have personal things, but asking them to find those universal ones, asking them to make them. And I always say, don't try and be funny if you're not funny, because that just is creepy and nobody likes it. But they may struggle to really find those universal stories, especially the higher up in the chain, right? The higher up a corporate ladder somebody gets, it gets lonely at the top. Why? Because fewer people can understand the stories, the decisions, the things that you're going through. So I do think it can be hard for a leader, especially a top level leader, to truly find stories that connect with the lowest level employee. Because there's so much range. And so that is something I do find I have to coach people on.
So it's interesting. So I worked in corporate for 14 years, gave it up last year, which was a great...
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's it's been a great choice in my mind. But what's been interesting, working with corporate leaders versus entrepreneurs, there is a very, very different shift in mindset, in thought and the way they approach situations. And I found that, I think you're right, that universal truth story is really, really important, because a corporate leader would share, 10 years ago, this happened to me with this client, and everyone sits there and goes, oh, okay, yeah, I've experienced that, or there's a connection there. Yeah. But there is a deeper connection that entrepreneurs make with their employees or people they work with, because they really tell you, great entrepreneurs do paint a picture, do tell a story. And it feels like it's more heartfelt. It feels like it's more from them rather than a cordoned off 9 to 5 that a corporate person will share about, and they won't necessarily share anything as heartfelt.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, when I made the shift and started coaching a lot more entrepreneurs and business owners, I noticed the exact same thing, right? That they had an easier time with stories, an easier time connecting with people because it's very personal. Mm-hmm. The story of their business, even the people who are serial entrepreneurs, right? Find a gap in the market, fill the gap, go find the next gap. Their ability to see the gap means they see the bigger picture. Yep. And, you know, oftentimes I talk about the visionaries, right? The founders, the people who see something out there in the world and say, I need to help with that. I need to make an impact. I need to fix whatever. Yeah. Those are people who have a really easy time usually communicating that story to other people, letting other people know where they're coming from. But even with that, even with a great story, that employee who's working in your accounting department, do they feel that same connection? You know, they're not the coach or the person creating websites. Mm-hmm. They're just doing numbers in a spreadsheet. Do they feel that same connection? A great leader can help the accounting person feel as connected to the purpose mm-hmm. as somebody who's actually working with the client 24/7. And I think that is a gift that visionary entrepreneurs can have over some of the corporate leaders.
And it very much, we're going very deep into leadership, but I'm fascinated by it. So I'm going to keep on this track. So for me, this is very simplistic and there's lots of nuances either side of what I'm going to describe, but there is a difference in sort of leadership from transformative leaders, which tend to be entrepreneurial, not necessarily mm-hmm. just entrepreneurs. You can have them in corporate as well, versus transactional leaders, which tend to be more corporate leaders than entrepreneurs. Would mm-hmm. you agree with that sort of analysis?
Absolutely. I think the idea of transformation is very entrepreneurial in spirit, right? Because that's what an entrepreneur does. They transform their environment. That's what they choose to do. That's what they battle for, right? And even if it's just, I transform my life, they still are in that transformation process. So I think it's easier than to make a shift or to let the path be, we're going to do transformational leadership, meaning that I'm not only transforming my life, transforming my business, but I'm also transforming the lives of the people who work for me. And I'm going to do my best to lead them from that place of understanding it's a transformation, it's a process, mm-hmm. versus lead them from, you're expected to know your job, just do it already. Mm-hmm. Right. And so very transactional in the corporate space. And there are still a lot of transformational leaders in the corporate space, but sometimes getting that through the entire company, especially the larger companies, can be a challenge because it's a different way of management and it's a different way of talking about the business. And I think that that is something that is definitely a difference between the two sides.
So let's go a little bit more sort of my usual path on these sorts of. So for your coaching, who would you say your ideal client is? What type of client is it?
Yeah, my ideal client is an entrepreneur who is stuck. And stuck can mean a lot of different things. Usually they've been in business for a year or two and they're stuck in the, okay, I'm doing all the things and I'm supposed to be living the life of luxury, but somehow that hasn't happened, right? Like it was painted a really pretty picture on Instagram, but that's not reality. What is wrong? What is happening? And typically what I find is, and I know you'll probably agree with this statement, you know, success is 90% mindset, 10% strategy. You can do strategy all day long, but if you don't have the right intention behind it, it's not going to matter. Yeah. And so I work with those entrepreneurs who are stuck in this space of, I feel like I'm doing all the things, but none of it's working. And I'm just stuck in the mud, right? I can't find my way out. And so for some, that's getting to six figures. For some, it's breaking through that seven-figure ceiling. Because every level we go to in life, whether it's in your personal life or your professional life or your business life, every level, we have to shift our mindset. We have to become a new person. Mm-hmm. And so what I try and do is find those entrepreneurs who are stuck mm-hmm. and give them that hammer to shake that glass ceiling up so we can go to the next level. And that's what I'm trying to do.
is it more related to profit or related to lifestyle that you help people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I would say 90% of the people I coach come to me because of profit, and lifestyle is the secondary. I think there's still about 10% who probably care about the lifestyle a lot more than profit. The sales aren't the issue. It's the work-life balance. Yeah. But I would say the majority come to me for the profit help as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So tell me about your podcast. I always like giving people a shout out when they do.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Thanks. So we started a podcast back in 2019 called Crazy Bold Joy. I was on this year of joy. Everything in my life had to make me, I have the perfect shirt on for it today. Choose happy. Everything was about joy. I was going to make it a year of joy. I even named my new car Joy because I was committed to this idea of joy. And I really did a deep dive into my own joy, into other people's joy. And so we did a whole season of episodes where I interviewed people about how they chase their joy, how they make their dreams come true, what that looks like. It was great. We loved it. But then I knew it was time, as most of my life story has panned out, especially today on this podcast, I needed a change. I needed a new path. And so I felt like my year of joy kind of ended. I was done, and it was a perfect season of podcasts, but I needed something new. And so now we're doing Monday Morning Coffee Club. And Monday Morning Coffee Club is something I started 2 years ago. Every Monday morning in my Facebook group called Always Be the Shark, because I love sharks. Yeah. In my Facebook group, we do a Monday morning coffee. Pour your cup of coffee, wake up with me, and we just talk about business. And I always give a focus for the week, something that I think entrepreneurs need to focus on. And I try and challenge people to focus on something for the week. I've been doing that for 2 years, and I was like, that would make a great podcast. Right. So all I've been doing is taking that same format, so they're short episodes, putting them into a podcast version and interviewing some really cool people along the way. So Monday Morning Podcast or Monday Morning Coffee Club is out, and everything is rolling. We should be launched fully in the next couple of weeks. So by the time people hear this episode, it will be out and running, and just a lot of fun. Have a quick Monday morning coffee with us and get motivated for your week.
Fantastic. It sounds like there's a book somewhere in there as well.
Oh, there are so many books in my life. I am actually working on kind of a half memoir, half business building book, and I hope to have it out end of November. So stay tuned.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. So you mentioned sharks. Why do you have such a fascination? I can see there's two sharks behind you, one with you riding, and there's one back there. What's the special?
And there's a third one up there if I tilt my screen appropriately. So sharks are my spirit animal, specifically great white sharks. Long story short, it was a phrase my mother said to me in a time when I was really struggling. And she just said, I think you just need to be the shark in your life. And it was a random offhanded comment. And it was all around humor because my mother knows I'm terrified of sharks. So that was kind of funny for her to say, be the shark, you know? It changed my life. The phrase changed my life. I used it in the dance world to break through some plateaus that I had stumbled across. I used it in my leadership as a way to just feel like I belonged in a room, at a table, at a seat, that sometimes I didn't always feel that. It was a confidence builder for me. Right. And so through that phrase, be the shark, which became my mantra, I decided to face my fear and not be scared of sharks, even though I was so terrified of sharks for my entire life till my 30s. But I decided to embrace my fear. I went swimming with nurse sharks in Mexico, and it was scary, but I loved it. And then I started to say, you know what? I'm not going to just love sharks. I'm going to be addicted to sharks. So they decorate my entire house. Right. I have a tattoo. Right. I have all of the things. And then back in 2018, 2019? It's been a few years. We actually won. My husband and I won the Shark Week sweepstakes. And we got to go on a fully paid trip to go cage diving with great white sharks.
Oh,
amazing. And it changed my life. I learned so much. I experienced so much. I just felt at home. And it was where I was meant to be. I am part shark. That's really what I feel now. So it's just, you know, for me, it's a confidence builder. Yeah. And it's something that makes me remind myself that I am allowed to own my ocean. And nobody can take that away from me. And that's been a really powerful message for me in the last 10, 12 years.
So just, I've never swum with sharks, but I've seen the cage and you go in and, but just this is pure, I've never met anyone who's been with a shark. When you're in there with sharks, there's you and probably someone else in there. Is there someone sort of looking at the sharks to sort of monitor their behavior as well? I'm assuming.
Absolutely. You're not out there by yourself. the cages that we were in held four people each. Right. So you were in there with three other people. And then you're just like 6 inches, maybe a foot below the waterline. So right. You're not deep. You're very much right at the waterline. You're connected. You're breathing through this hose to the boat. And then on the boat are these people who are watching the sharks come through, and they're trying to get them to swim past the cage so you get the best experience. But they're constantly there watching, making sure nothing bad happens, all of those things. So it's very, very safe. Although I have to tell a funny story, though, real quick. My husband, on our way out there, so you're on this boat, and we're on the boat for 5 days. And on the boat, as you're powering through the water. I don't know what that's called. Drive a boat, I guess. So you're driving through the ocean. The cages are on the back of the boat, like on the deck, though. That's where they're strapped in for the journey. And there's this huge dent in one of the cages. And my husband notices this on day one as we're taking this journey. And we're sitting out back eating dinner, looking at the cages. And he's like, I'm not sure about this. That's a really big dent. What causes a big dent like that? And of course, the crew, being who they are, hear this and come walking up, and he's like, oh, a shark did that, obviously. And I thought my husband, like, all the white drape, I mean, I thought he was going to die. But he went in the water with me every single day. He was a trooper. Oh, it was definitely not as much his thing as mine, but he went and we did it. But yes, they were amazing creatures. It was an amazing thing. But yes, you feel totally safe. In fact, I even touched one. You feel absolutely safe and good. There's a lot of people watching your back, so it's okay. Brilliant. Everybody should go.
Okay, last section is future endeavors. So what's the plan for the future for you?
Yeah, that's great. So I love live events. As a dancer, as a performer, I love being on stage. That's where I do my greatest work. That's where I have my biggest impact. And so live events have had to take a break lately. And so future endeavors right now on my brain is how quickly can I get back to live events? That's where I've always enjoyed doing my work. And it's really where I built my business. You know, my business wouldn't exist. Even my coaching clients, most of my coaching clients come from my live events. Right. So it's one of those things that without live events, it's really been hard to figure out how do I do business differently. So I'm super excited to get back to live events.
So what does that mean for you? What do you have something in Texas or do you have it elsewhere?
Yeah. So it's always been in Texas so far, although we did do one on a cruise ship, which was super fun once. We actually took a gang on a cruise ship and went out and did a business thing, which was awesome. We did a little retreat. But the rest of them have been in Texas. Typically, it's 2 days, maybe 3 days. And it's just around one aspect of business, right? So we have one. Our goal is to have one in October. And it will be all about positioning, right? How do you position yourself as the sought-after expert in your field? How do you get people to hear, right, mindset and think your name? How do you get people to hear leadership and think your name? Like, we're going to talk all about positioning. And so we always have a theme, whether it be positioning, whether it be scaling, whether it be hiring new employees, we always have a theme for the event. Yeah. And it's just a time for business owners to get around the table and talk through some stuff, make an action plan, get a lot of motivation and mindset. There will be shark pictures and quotes pretty much everywhere on every page. And
if there wasn't.
I know, you would be, right? People will come to things and bring me shark things. Like, and they're like, I hope you have this. I have shark costumes. My husband and I have matching hoodies. I mean, we have all the things. But it's really just a space. I think it's so important as business owners to come together with other business owners in an environment that's outside of your normal environment, which is why I think live events are so great. Virtual has been awesome this last year, but it's not the same because you're still in your house with your stuff. I like making everybody come to me, come stay at the hotel. Let's leave life behind and just focus on these topics for a couple days. So yeah, those are our live events and I love them. So those are coming up in the future. The podcast is coming up in the future and just going to grow. And I'm super excited for that. And I think, you know, future endeavors, I think one of the future endeavors on my mind right now is how do I get back into traveling? I traveled the world as a teenager. I got to see some amazing things, go to amazing places. My husband and I got married in Italy. So we're world travelers. We love that. And we haven't gotten to do that in a while. So I think we're planning on a trip to Dublin next year, and then we'll kind of go from there. But definitely world travel in my future, for sure.
Yeah, we're thinking 2022. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2022. We will definitely start pushing the boundaries of where we go. Hopefully, like this year, we're trying to get a couple of small breaks in the UK. But we definitely the sort of plan for next year, in a year's time, I should say. We hopefully will have travel back into our lives as well.
Yes. It'll feel so good to get back to that.
Yeah. Okay. So we're coming to the end of the interview. I ask the same six questions to all of my guests. They're quick fire questions. They don't need a quick fire answer. First one is, what's the best decision that you made?
To start my business, to quit my job and start my business. Best decision I ever made. Next to marrying my husband. Oh, I probably should say that one first.
Yeah.
Marry my husband. And then. I was so quick fire. I didn't think that through. He'll listen to this and be like, really? But okay. Yeah. I stick with my original though. Still the best decision I ever made was to quit my corporate job and go off on my own.
Awesome. What's the best piece of advice you've been given?
The best piece of advice that I've truly ever been given is that if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will. And that you have to believe first. And sometimes believing is faking it till you make it. But you have to have that if you want other people to believe in you. Because if you don't believe in it, how are you going to get them to? And I think that applies to selling. I think that applies to life. I think that applies to relationships. Just that belief in yourself is critical, and work on that every day.
So true. Who's helped you most in your career?
That is a tough one. You know, I've had a lot of coaches over the years. I'm a big believer. If you are a coach, I feel like you should have coaches. I have a lot of coaches. I have worked with a lot of coaches. I do believe that the person who had the biggest impact on me was my first coach, because I truly believe without him, I wouldn't have anything that happened after that. Yeah. And he was a sales coach, and he got me to a point where I could sell and not feel icky or slimy. And that's such a critical piece of business that I don't think I would be here now without him in my life then. And what's so crazy about it is he was working at a sales training company. So I went to a sales training company to get sales training and coaching. And then partly because of my inspiration of how successful my business became, he quit and started his own business. And so now we're entrepreneurs together. And that's a really cool thing too. So I get to help him now as he helped me then. So that's really neat. But I would say him. Yeah.
Do you have any regrets?
Oh gosh. Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with no. I think there are lots of things we can regret in our life. But the truth is, everything that I either said yes to or no to, I may have made a different decision, but it brought me to where I am now. And I'm really loving where I am now. So I'm going to say that every decision was the right one at the time, even if now I can look back and go, hey, as a 30-something-year-old, as opposed to an 18-year-old, I wouldn't have made that choice. But I think that all your choices get you to where you are. So I'm happy with where I am. So I'm okay with that.
Okay, cool. What are you most proud of?
I think the thing I am most proud of is not giving up on my business when it was hard. You know, year one, I made $0. Year two, I made $17,000. That would be enough to make anyone quit. I am most proud that I then year three made $158,000. And that's all because I didn't quit. And there have been moments since then where I thought about quitting again, but I never quit. And I'm proud of myself for that, because quitting is easy. Staying with it is hard. And so I get to say I do hard things, and I like that.
Good. What does legacy mean to you?
Legacy to me is the impact we leave when our presence is no longer here, right? So for me, legacy is how will I have impacted people so that they continue to live greater lives because I have been a part of it. That's my legacy. I don't have any kids. We don't plan on having kids. So I know a lot of people think legacy is in family, but for me, that's not it. For me, it's in my clients. It's in the people who heard something from me and it helped them. That's my legacy. At some point when they pass on, will they say, well, because of Stevie Dawn, that's legacy. For somebody to use your name in that way, to me, that's legacy. And my hope is that there's a million people in this world who would say my name at that point.
Amazing. Lastly, where can people find you?
Absolutely. You can find me at Dr. Stevie Dawn, Dr. Stevie Dawn, all together, all one word, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all the things. And if you go to my website, you can go to drstevedawn.com, or you can go to alwaysbethesharkshark.com. Just depends on your flavor. They both intertwine, but I like having something that's shark related. So alwaysbethesharkshark.com is always my favorite.
Oh, you got that domain as well. Did you have to pay for it separately, or did you find it?
No, I got it. I got all the shark ones. I've got Be the Shark, Always Be the Shark, Forever the Shark. I've got all the shark domains. I really want Crazy Shark Lady, but that one is already taken.
Oh.
Who took Crazy Shark Lady? That's totally my domain.
It must be.
Oh, they are. They must be. They must be. Or they're going to try and sell it to me later. That's all I can say.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, every domain I can. Absolutely.
Okay, Stevie, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you. You too. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Cheers. Bye.